Welcome to the Kick-Ass Couples Podcast. This is the place where we help committed couples who want to level up their marriage experience newfound clarity, hope, and confidence. We're Matthew and Kim, co-hosts and husband and wife.
In 26 years together, we've seen a lot and never thought it could be as good as it is right now. We're here to help you successfully navigate the messy, dirty, and wonderful world of marriage.
We believe all couples deserve and are capable of experiencing an extraordinary and fulfilling marriage. And each week, we're bringing you life lessons from real-life successful couples to help you grow and strengthen your relationship.
We'll get started right after this message. If you want to learn how to experience the best, most fulfilling year of your marriage, we invite you to order Matthew's new book, Kick-Ass Husband, Winning at Life, Marriage, and Sex. You can get it at Amazon.com or visit Matthew's website, www.matthewpkaufman.com. Again, that's Amazon.com or www.matthewpkaufman.com. And now back to the show.
Welcome back to the Kick-Ass Couples Podcast. Today we're hanging out with Eric and Natalie Southward. Natalie is the founder and director of Life Transformation Counseling, where she works as a licensed mental health counselor. She has over 16 years of mental health counseling experience and is trained in Gottman Couples Therapy, which she uses to host individual and marital intensives. Natalie is also a Gottman Bringing Baby Home and Seven Principles educator. She also loves speaking at a variety of organizations, including schools, community groups, and churches. Having faced many challenging life situations of her own, Natalie believes that one of her greatest strengths is the ability to relate to others going through life hurts and struggles. Eric is the founder and director of Southward Elite Basketball and Little Hoopsters Academy. Little Hoopsters Academy, LHA, is a five-month basketball development program for children. He teaches them life lessons such as teamwork, respect, discipline, and sportsmanship. Eric also runs individual and group basketball training for kids ages 5 through 17 through Southward Elite Basketball, SEB. Eric's childhood heavily impacted him and developed him into the man he is today. He was raised in a single-parent household in an urban community where he lived with his mom, three siblings, and two nephews. His calling in life became giving back to his community and mentoring and coaching kids. Eric and Natalie met in middle school when they were 12. They both had a love for the game of basketball, but not quite yet for each other. They continue to run into each other because of their love for basketball and both being collegiate athletes. A few years after college, Eric and Natalie crossed paths again. This time, it was different. After going on a date, they became best friends and said, "I do," just 3 years later. Now, they have been married and together for 13 years. Join us as we learn how, despite their deeply challenging lows in life, their love for God and each other has remained strong in their primary focus. This dynamic, committed couple shares how they have committed to the work and the process of becoming their best individually and together in marriage. They are modeling what a thriving, healthy relationship looks like to their family, friends, and all who are graced by crossing their paths. And we are so excited to welcome Eric and Natalie Southward today, a true kick-ass couple from Tampa, Florida, diverse backgrounds, different careers, but none the same, a couple that we are excited to have on the show today. So welcome to the Kick-Ass Couples Podcast.
Yes, thank you. Welcome. Thank you. Can you tell our listeners how many years you've been married?
So we've been married for 10 years, but we've known each other since eighth grade.
Since we were 12, we've known each other, and we've been together for 13 years.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Wow, so 25 years in total. Wow, you guys are, you're young. You're young. Yeah. That's great. Well, congratulations. And so the question that we like to kick off with for everybody, and you guys can both answer this, doesn't matter who goes first, but what do you think makes you a kick-ass couple?
So I would say our faith, right? So we we love God more than we love each other. And so because of that, I believe that it shines in our relationship with one another to be like-minded, to stay in the healthy. And another thing that I think really helps us is that we stay curious. Like Eric said, it sounds so weird calling you Eric. I never call him by his first name unless we're having a conflict. And he never says Natalie unless we're having a conflict. But so wait.
What do you guys call each other?
We need to know those.
So I call him E, or I call him E-Love or Bay. So that's his little nicknames. Like, you never hear us call each other by our first names ever, unless there's a conflict, and we know it's almost like a signal that there's a conflict. But that's why it sounds weird, right? Me saying Eric. So I'm going to call him E, or call him E.
That's fine. Okay. That's fine.
So since, you know, E had mentioned that we have known each other since we were 12. So we know a lot about each other. We went to rival schools, all these things. But we always were around each other, same friends, etc. And I think that because we stay curious, right? I always want to learn more about him. I want to hear his stories. Even if it's a story I've heard 2-3 times, I just stay curious because I feel like there's more takeaway. And I feel like it just invites me into his world on a deeper level, which is the basis of our friendship. So like this is my guy, you know, like he is my best friend. So I think that that really helps us stay so grounded and solid together. It's my perspective.
Great. How about you?
Should I go after that? I mean,
we're going to let you go first next time. I promise.
I mean, pretty much everything she said as well. But me personally, I think we are, you know, kick-ass couple because, I mean, we do have different backgrounds. But when it comes to, you know, parenting and just being able to communicate on that level, we are different. We are alike. So she is my best friend as well. And we athletic too, which is awesome. You know, I definitely wanted a wife who was into sports as well. And she loves basketball just as much as I love basketball. So that definitely makes us a kick-ass couple, along with just who we are as individuals and how we come together as a couple, and just loving one another and in faith as well. And, you know, we family oriented as well. So, you know, all those things just make us a kick-ass couple for sure. Yeah,
we speak each other's language, like the same language, right? So different backgrounds, cultures, experiences, but we speak each other's language, right? Like he gets me like no one else. And, you know, I get him like no one else in this world. So I feel like that is the icing on the cake for us.
I really love hearing that he's told stories and you've listened to some of those stories over and over again. But what really hit me is that every time he tells them, you take something new away from it. And I never really thought of, you know, hearing those stories. Of course, over years and years, we're going to tell the same story. And sometimes the story changes or it gets bigger, right? It gets larger than life. But I love that every time, because he's your person, you hear something new or feel something different from it. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, of course.
No problem.
That's good. Genuine.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so Natalie, I'm going to start with you with this question. I really like to go backward a little bit and talk about families of origin, because we really believe that we are a product of the people who raised us. In some cases, that's a great experience. Mm-hmm. In some cases, sadly, it's not. But I'd love to hear a little bit about what love looked like when you were growing up and how it was portrayed to you in your family.
Okay. So when I think of my childhood and growing up, I mean, love is attached to that. My parents loved us in their own ways and very well. I was raised where my parents were both married throughout my childhood. And my mom was extremely affectionate, and she's just this affirming individual. Like, she is a giver. She's the definition of a giver. And so she just would be affectionate and love on us and kisses and hugs and just building us up and just praying over us and being invested in our worlds. And so I always felt loved growing up. I felt picked, right? I felt like my mom picked us, the three of us. So with my siblings and my dad, he loved us by providing. My dad was a phenomenal provider to the point where my mom was a nurse and she didn't have to work anymore. My dad provided very well and met our needs in that way. And he always showed up. My dad was our coach. He taught me how to tie my shoe. He was our jokester. And, you know, he was just so fun and full of play and silly. And I just felt always loved by my dad. You know, he's just to this day is one of my closest friends, you know? So I feel like they showed us love extremely well as a couple. And it was family oriented to boot. Like it was just about us, the kids, our sports, our school, our plays, our church, and it was always together as a family. And so I felt, that my cup runneth over with love from my parents growing up, and my grandparents lived on the same lane as us. And so they were married, 60 plus years, you know, and so they modeled healthy love and just a beautiful marriage that they prioritized one another over the children. So it was a nice balance to have both.
How did your parents express love to each other? How did they model that for you?
Yeah, so that part was more, I would say, my guess would be behind the scenes because there was three of us. but they weren't really affectionate. I mean, they were always together, always doing stuff together and joking and laughing. And but I didn't see that affection towards one another, right? I didn't see the holding hands, the kissing, the sitting on the couch together, close, you know. And
even younger?
Even when I was younger, yeah. I didn't see it. So
I know when I came in the picture, I definitely didn't see that.
Between my parents. So we've talked about that, just how that's something that wasn't modeled. It was poured onto us. I believe, you know, looking back, that the way, I mean, they loved on us as kids. Like we were their focus. We were their priority. And so they didn't really, I didn't see the love shown to one another, affectionate, you know, affection and whatnot, but I saw it from my grandparents. And like I said, they helped raise us. They were right down the lane on the river. And, my grandma sat on my grandfather's lap. They were in their 70s, late 70s. My grandpa passed when he was in his 80s, but my grandma still sat on his lap. They still held hands. I mean, my grandma would talk to me about sex and she was in her 70s. So they displayed, I mean, my grandpa would touch her on the hip and just beautiful. I saw that growing up and it was just, it was so attractive, right? It was just such, so beautiful. So
that's beautiful. Two things I want to go back a little bit because you said two great things I didn't want to let go. Mm-hmm. One was that you're saying that the kids weren't the center of the relationship in your grandparents and your parents. And that's something that Kim and I definitely believe. And a lot of people get shocked when you go, what do you mean your kids aren't the most important? Mm-hmm. I go, well, hey, the kids are important. But if this relationship, if that relationship's not firing on all cylinders, then it doesn't really matter because it's not going to. So I love that. And I agree with that. And I wanted to say, I appreciate you saying that and your commitment. And the other one is that prioritization. The whole reason that we're doing this and having this conversation is you got to prioritize your spouse. Yeah. And the woman sitting next to me is the most important person in my life. There's no relationship, humanly, I'm talking humanly, that's more important than her.
Right.
And if you got that right, then it leads to all other great roads. So I appreciate that you and E, if I'm allowed to say it, E, is that a, are you going to look at me funny if I call you E or should I say
nah,
Eric?
Nah, if you call me by my other nickname, E Love, I'll probably look at you.
Nah, well, okay. I won't say Bay. And I won't say E Love because I'm not, but I will say E. All right. Good.
So, but Matthew, I want to interject really quickly. So my parents prioritized us as children over the way that they showed love to each other, but my grandparents prioritized their marriage. And so those are things that I know we'll probably unpack as we move forward in the podcast. Sure. But I saw a direct difference in their relationships based off of their prioritization. So I love that you pointed that out.
Thanks.
And we'll definitely, like you said, we'll come back to a little bit of that. Mm-hmm. But I want to move on to E and ask you the same question. Can you tell me a little bit about how love was modeled in your family when you were growing up?
So for me, I think the way it was modeled, because my mom and dad pretty much got divorced when I was like maybe five. I only have like maybe a couple of images and like just like
memories
of my dad being at the house maybe a few times, to be honest with you. He didn't really involve himself with us as a family because it was me and my brother, which was from him. And then my sister, my older sister, she has another dad. But he never involved himself in any activities that we did because we all play sports. We play football, you know, baseball and obviously basketball. But he never came to any games or even church. He never showed up. He was just always doing his own thing. So I never really got any love from him, even to this day. Like, he shows no emotion. And what's funny is that I brought my kids to see him one day. And the kids were asking me, they was like, "Dad, who is that? Who is that?" You know, and it's like they have no idea who that is. So I had to tell them who it is. But instead of calling him Grandpa, they just call him by his first name, which is Billy. And he got offended from it. And he was like, "I'm your grandpa." But I'm thinking, like, they don't know that, you know. So it's like they're going to call you by your first name because that's what they know you from. They don't know you as Grandpa. But I mean, he's a good guy. You know, I love him because he is my dad. But his he definitely didn't show any love to us at all. He still doesn't. But growing up in our household, we didn't do anything like hugging, telling each other we love you. We just didn't do that. You know, it was just see you later. You know, that was it. And even to this day, like, my mom, she'll show my kids love. I guess it's how I guess the kids like bring it out of you.
Like the affection.
Yeah. Because my mom now, she'll hug the kids and say, "I love you," and this and that. But me growing up personally, I've never seen my mom hug me or my brother or my sister or tell us she loved us. I got love from my coaches from, you know, playing pal football. And they were the ones that were like, you know, sort of like father figures, you know, and like the team moms and things like that. They show more love than really my mom did. But she showed love through, you know, coming to sports and supporting us. Mm-hmm. And she showed up every game. I mean, I can definitely say that she definitely came to every single game, no matter where it was. It was in Tallahassee to, you know, down south, even out of state, she showed up. So I definitely was appreciative of her doing that and showing love. So
and she worked. I mean, she provided. She was the provider. She was a single parent.
She definitely provided for us. Yeah. And, you know, we just like, you know, any other, you know, family growing up in the inner city. I mean, you're going to have your struggles. But she was a good mom. She provided. She still is a good mom. And I love her for that, for working hard and providing for me and my siblings. And, you know, but when it came to the hugging part, she definitely didn't do that. But now I show that to my kids, like hugging and kissing. I love you. I mean, I got all that from Natalie, to be honest with you. So because before I didn't do all that stuff either. So she showed me how to do that with the kids. And I love it. Like, I like doing that. So every time we leave, you know, say, "I love you." It's one of those things where if we don't say it, then it's kind of like, it feels weird. So, you know, I got it from her.
I love hearing that Natalie taught you how to be comfortable with showing your emotions and your feelings and saying, "I love you." I think that's really great. Are there things from your history or from your family of origin that you brought with you to your relationship that you've said, you know, "I'm definitely going to do this. This worked really well," or "No, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to change this. I'm going to do it differently."
I think for me, the one thing I didn't want to bring into this relationship was not being afraid, because I felt like a lot of people in my family, the reason why they didn't reach their goals or try to become something because they were afraid. They were afraid to leave small town, my hometown, Dade City. They was afraid to achieve and do something great. For instance, like my dad, he was a good football player. And, you know, everybody talks about how great he was. but he was afraid to leave Day City because he, you know, just afraid. And he stayed and got a job here, and that's what he did. Same thing with my mom. She's a good singer. She was afraid to leave. So I think for me, I didn't want to bring in that effect of being afraid to try something new, jump into my own business. And, you know, you never know what can happen. So just not being afraid. And I try to teach that to the, to my kids as well. And I mean, Natalie helped me with that as well, too, jumping into my own business by, you know, just taking a leap of faith.
Sure. That, well, that's great. And I think that, you know, what I loved, what I hear is that you are willing to accept influence from Natalie. And, you know, that's, and that's, I do it with Kim and Kim does it with me. And then couples that are successful, kick ass, that do well, each spouse is willing to accept influence, meaning, hey, I don't know it all and you're going to teach me and I can't wait to learn. And having that willingness to learn. So you guys each had some very different, you know, amazing, wonderful, and challenging backgrounds. How did you guys work to knit that together into a relationship that works, is fulfilling, loving, successful? So how do you take those different backgrounds and then come together and weave a fabric that's strong and loving and successful?
Well, I would say the commitment for us, you know, it's just that foundational level. Like, we are committed. We are committed to one another. We are committed to the process of marriage. We're committed to just growing together, you know, and following our own individual dreams, but doing that in a way that we grow in the same direction, right? Like, we can grow individually, but to grow as a couple and to do that dance together. I feel like, you know, just being open influence. I mean, I use that term all the time. I'm like, staying open to influence, right? And just continuing to be teachable, right? Like, he teaches me so much about myself, like, over the years and, you know, 13 years together. And, you know, I feel like I'm constantly learning even about myself, right? And not taking things personally, like showing grace and just recognizing that, you know, if he says something or responds or reacts a certain way, it's not necessarily personally against me. It could be something that's going on in his day, or maybe a conversation he just had, or I don't know, maybe he slept wrong. Like, I don't know, but I don't have to take everything that's said or directed towards me in like a negative way, if that makes sense. So, but I just feel like just staying committed, you know, to the process of marriage. Like, it is so much fun. I have so much fun with E, and it, I feel like he's a party waiting to happen. However, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, you know, and it's a lot of sacrifice. And, you know, it's, I know what his needs are and he knows what mine are. And it's, we're competitors, right? So we've played sports our whole lives, and that competition within us has been a negative in our marriage, but we have learned how to turn it into a positive, because I feel like we try to outgive each other, if that makes sense. Like, I try to meet his needs, he tries to meet my needs. It's almost like this competition of like giving. So then we're both fulfilled. And so we've learned how to turn that competition into something that actually grows us, right, in our intimacy and our connection, versus divide us. Because you said divide us in fighting, like, who's going to win? Who's going to win? Who's going to have the last word? And that has been tremendous growth, and just finding out how to make it work for us and versus against us.
Yeah, I love how you took controversy and just totally turned it around into a fun game.
Thank God.
Who's going to give good? Who's going to give more good?
Yeah,
exactly.
Who's going to win the good giving?
Well, you talked a little bit about commitment, and that's the first of our three C's, which are our three pillars that we really focus on. Commitment. Do you have anything to add? Maybe E, you have something you want to add to the commitment between the two of you.
Yeah, what does commitment look like to you, E, in your relationship with Natalie?
I mean, I think for both of us, just being able to be on that same level of when it comes to just agreeing on things. And like she said, with the, what was he talking about? The
competition?
Competition, yeah. Even with that, I mean, you know, because we both are like, you know, always, because we're super competitive, you know. So I think even with that, you know, just being able to turn around and make it to something positive when it comes to that, it's just one of those things where I'm committed to doing something like that. So, I mean, but I think it's all that right now.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah.
That's
all that. What about communication? That's the second of our three C's. Tell me a little bit about how you communicate with each other.
And let's hear from you first, E. Like, yeah. On communication. Okay. Tell me about what does communication look like between you guys, and how do you handle that?
So yeah, definitely communication is a huge thing. Because I know at the beginning of our marriage, that was one of the big issues for us. Like, not communicating, because there will be times at the beginning of the marriage, I would just up and leave. And she'd be like, where you at? And then I'd come back probably a couple hours later and I'd be like, oh, you know, I just went to the store or whatever. So I think, you know, like communication from just communicating on like where we are and just having that open communication of if you're going to do something, or even if you're going to make a purchase or something, you know, I think that's a huge one too. If you're just going to go out and just purchase something huge, that definitely needs to be communicated and talked about. If what we discussed before, if you're going to do something like that. So communication is definitely huge. I try to tell people that all the time, if they get married or even any kind of like relationship, just being, you know, boyfriend and girlfriend, you have to communicate with your partner. Cause if not, it's going to get very rocky, and it's just going to be just, you guys going to be like this the whole time, you know,
conflict
and not on the same page. So we definitely worked on it and got better, and we're in a good space with it right now. So it's good.
Do you have to make time to communicate? I mean, and I'm sure you're both busy, and I know, you know, you both have your own businesses and they're thriving. And so a lot of times, people are not able to communicate throughout the day. Do you make time for it later in the day? How do you communicate with each other?
So like, yeah, definitely with the business, because hers, you know, basically, because I do mine in the morning as well, and then she'd go and, you know, do her business too. But I think for us, we communicate throughout the day. You know, we check in, you know, here and there, from, you know, talking to texting, just seeing how our day is going, and just trying to catch up with each other's day. But I think for us, our communication really is when she gets home from the day. We put the kids to bed. Mm-hmm. We have that time at night to where we can, like, unwind and just sit there and talk about our day, what's going on, work on some ideas. And that's like our time right there, you know, from, I don't know, what would you say, like,
Yeah, I'd say like, yeah, it's about, in the evening, you know, maybe
10.
Yeah.
That's like our time frame right there. So we had a time to where we could just talk about whatever and, you know, and not get interrupted by the kids, so to speak. You know?
I hear you.
Yeah.
So we have three as well. So we know you have to carve out the time. You have
to
make the time.
Yeah, different ages and different stages. And that's, but we got to carve out that time for each other. So the third C we want to talk about is conflict resolution. And there's no doubt that conflicts arise, right? And I don't, you know, as you guys may or may not know, you know, 69% of all issues you're never going to solve. So you go, okay, two thirds of these things we're not going to be able to solve. So what does conflict resolution look like between you, Nat and Natalie, and when with E? So something happens, there's friction. How do you guys handle it and navigate those waters effectively?
So one thing I think that we have done extremely well over the years is we're able to compartmentalize, truly. Like, we can compartmentalize and we can table an issue depending on the time and space that we have. So if the kids are around, we're not going to unpack conflict, right? We're not going to try to move towards resolution. He and I, in our friendship, there's enough respect and love, and we're a team, right? Like, I'm not going anywhere. He's not going anywhere. You know, that's that commitment piece. Like, we're a team. And so we're committed to saying, hey, we can table this. We can compartmentalize it. We can move on with our day, laugh with our kids, be around other people, not put a cold shoulder to each other or act fake, our friendship is solid. We might have a conflict in a certain area, but I think that that has really helped us, because then there's a pause in the midst of the conflict. Then we can self-regulate. We have goodness in those moments with the kids or with each other. You know, we can go play basketball, shoot hoops, go for a run, whatever, and still be together and enjoy that. And then we can come back and revisit the conflict, which I have seen tremendous resolution come from, right? Versus before, we used to, you know, kind of bow up like, all right, let's go. Let's go toe to toe. Who's going to say, who's going to have the last word, walking out of the room, speaking under my breath, you know, things like that. That's a trigger, right? But we've learned what triggers each other. We have enough respect and for I have enough respect for him, but I also have self-respect and to recognize that that's not attractive. I want my husband to find me sexy, and me talking under my breath, me mumbling, me saying some rude words, that's not attractive. That's not drawing him towards me. So I feel like we table things extremely well. And then we come back to it in an appropriate time and unpack it to where we're really in a space of listening to hear one another versus listening to speak. And that's a problem.
Right.
I think it's great for our listeners to hear that. You know, when you're in the moment, it's really hard to stop. You want to speak under your breath and you want to criticize, and the tendency is to stay at it. But the fact that you can compartmentalize, take a breath, a pause, and even go play together or do something different together, that's huge. And so I hope that our listeners can take that with them from this episode, because that in itself is huge advice.
It is. Timing. I mean, you guys touched on it, is huge, and being willing, right? Being willing, taking personality or will out of it and say, hey, we're going to table it and we're going to come back when we can. And what I also loved, I want to talk to people about, conflicts are going to arise, right? But when you said, you know what, we can compartmentalize because you're committed and your friendship is deep, right? And it was based on friendship. You can say, the world's not going to evolve and revolve around this one issue. And I can still, there's so many things I love about my spouse, even though one thing is upsetting me, we're going to dwell on all that good and still be real, authentic in the friendship and come back because we're committed and say, you know what, we got to talk about this. But I think it doesn't mean that anytime there's conflict, we're cold and the walls go up and we stop communication and we're harsh, because that's not what friends do. That's not what partners do. That's not what teammates, you said team, we're teammates, right? And and I think everybody needs to hear that, because if you don't do that, then you are going to have, your relationship's going to be out of control. It's going to be high and low, extreme highs and extreme lows, and win lose. But when you have that self-regulating, you say, hey, it's an issue, we're going to table it, bloop, but we're going to keep enjoying the love because there's more love that's there. And everybody out there that's listening to this, you're going to have conflicts and you can love your way through them. And it doesn't have to be nuclear war every time there's an issue between each other, right?
When it comes to creating a kick-ass marriage, do you ever wonder what you could be doing better? Have you ever thought how helpful it would be to be a part of a like-minded community of other imperfect couples who want to level up in their number one relationship? Come visit Kick-Ass Couples Nation, where you can talk with people just like you who are looking for ways to invest in and increase their joy, commitment, and fulfillment in their most important human relationship. You'll have access to a team of licensed marriage therapists, coaches, articles, podcasts, live webinars, and more. Just visit MatthewPHoffman.com so you can learn more about a community that's ready to help you level up. That's MatthewPHoffman.com so you can become of the growing Kick-Ass Couples Nation right now.
And I think the challenge is everyone's looking for a win, right? And that's dangerous. That's a slippery slope. And I love that you're not looking at that at all. You're just saying, let's take a break. We'll come back at this.
And, right, because,
and we'll resolve it. Yeah, it's resolvable.
Good. That win, right? I like what you said, Kimberly, where it's like looking for that win, right? It's not going to be healthy. It's that
last word.
Yeah. And it's creating. Here's the thing. If E wins and I lose, he loses. And if I win and he loses, I ultimately lost. So it's creating that win-win. What I'm about to, what is my goal and purpose about what I'm getting ready to say? And is that going to meet my goal and purpose, right? What's the goal and purpose of what I'm about to say? And if I say it, is it going to meet that? And so to me, it's creating that win-win, you know, and getting to that healthy conflict resolution.
Yeah, absolutely. I love. So one of the things is like before you're married, it's you and them, right? Or I and them. When you're married, it's us. And so is it a win for us? And if you're focusing on the win for us, you're saying, I'm willing, the sacrifice, the commitment, say, you know what? I'm putting me aside because I want it to be good for us. And I think that's another tough lesson is a win for us is a win for the marriage. And, you know, you learn how to do that. Can you think of any conflicts that have arisen between the two or how you guys handle them or what would you, we've had a good discussion on conflict resolution, but anything that you can add, or can you remember a time where there was conflict and what you did to get through it?
I think like what Natalie said is, in the beginning for me, I wanted to, when we had conflict, I wanted to keep going with it as opposed to just taking some time away. But I think, trying to think of one, but I think when we did have conflict, I think now when we, if we do have a conflict, I learned now to where take a moment, take a step back, and I will go outside and shoot some baskets or maybe take a ride on the bike. You know, because I think for me, and I try to tell a lot of people about this too, like, it's really doesn't do anybody any good if you guys continue to keep arguing like that. Because first of all, your kids are going to see it, and then they're going to look at you and be like, man, mom and dad is always fighting all the time. So, and then you're going to have other people staring at you too, saying that, man, they just continue to fight all the time. Like, they must seem angry with each other or miserable with each other. So, I think I love that idea of being able to take a step back and then get your mind right and then coming back to it later on and then talking about the situation and then moving forward with it, you know, because at the end of the day, I love her with all my heart. And it's like, I'm not trying to hurt her by saying, because you could be in these conflicts and you can say some mean stuff, you know, if you keep it going.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hit those landmines, right? Those triggers that blow stuff up.
You both could be saying some mean stuff at each other. And it's like, if you take that step back and just think about it, just say, okay, what are we doing right now? All right, let's talk about this. And then you can come to a resolution and, you know, get through the day. And then and on top of that, your kids don't see that stuff, you know, because you don't want your kids seeing all that arguing and stuff like that, because they have that image in their head, like, and they go back to school and tell it too, if you allow it. They go back and say, man, my mom and dad argue all the time. And then, you know, and then it'd be out. So, yeah, I definitely love how we incorporated that into it, because before I just thought you just argue with each other back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. But I love being able to take a step back, though. It's awesome.
Great advice. Good advice.
So other than the three pillars that we just talked about, we have 10 more and you do have that list in front of you. And so, E, if you'll take a look at the remaining 10. And tell me, which one of those stands out most to you? Is there one that really resonates with you? One that's important to you?
Trust and honest, and be honest, because I think for me, having that trust, because I always kept my circle of friends super small because I never really trust anybody like that. So just being able to say, you're my best friend, you know, we've been through a lot. I trust you with everything. You know, she definitely has my back for sure when it comes to even helping me out with some of my youth leagues. And I remember one night we stayed up to 3 a.m. doing a whole roster and shirts for my youth league. She didn't have to do that, but she did that and she put everything together. And it came out beautifully. So, I mean, I can definitely trust her with everything, you know. But that definitely sticks out on my for real trust, for sure.
How about for you, Natalie? Is there one that stands out to you that is important?
It's funny. He pointed. He knows. He knows me. No, he does. Like, okay, that's
so
the
tell
one.
Us, E, which one is it, E? I want to hear. Which one's he going to pick?
Which one is it?
Oh, intimacy.
Mm-hmm. He pointed. He goes, intimacy. I love it. He's like, you. Awesome. Yeah. So out of that list, intimacy is most important. So when I look at that word, you know, I think of like primary for me is having that spiritual intimacy with my husband, and being able to, because if I don't have that spiritual intimacy, then I'm not going to have that emotional intimacy, right? So that spiritual intimacy is solid. We have this beautiful emotional intimacy, right? Which there's like this intellectual intimacy that's experienced. And then I can have that physical closeness, which then leads to the sexual intimacy. So it's just that solid flow for me, like that continuum of intimacy that we hit that in our marriage. And it is, I mean, yes, like trust me with everything, you know, because when that intimacy is filled up in my life, 100%, I feel like I'm a totally different person.
All right. That Natalie, that is gold. And I want, and I want, I'm going to letting that marinate for our listeners right now, because, you know, if guys, and he will laugh because he's a guy and I'm a guy, the last thing you said was sexual intimacy. That's important, right?
Right.
But you mentioned three other things before that lead there. So can we go back through those and give me some, so we said spiritual intimacy, which I agree is important. But give me an example. What is spiritual intimacy?
Okay. So, to pray together, that's an extremely vulnerable, intimate, exposed state, right? Like to pray with him, he prays for me. We have this book that we read at night in our talk time. It's 2 pages and we literally talk for 45 plus minutes because there's some questions and there's verses in there and we just unpack and it just fills me up spiritually because he leads, right? We worship together, go to church together, at night, you know, with our kids, he's reading this devotional for boys and I walk in and I hear him reading it with our son. And let me tell you, that is so hot. I'm like, yeah, let's put the kids to bed and then let's hang out, you know, because he's praying. He's raising up this precious boy and our sweet son to be a man. And, you know, and our daughter, we pray together and it's beautiful, right? It just draws me closer to him. So that's an example or a couple examples of spiritual intimacy.
Sure. And then the next thing you said after that. What?
Is emotional intimacy, emotional. Right? So, in that intellectual. So for me, the emotional and the intellectual go hand in hand. I love stimulating conversations. I listen to people all day long. I do the deepest of relating, right? As a therapist. And so that connection, like being honest, being able to trust him with my insecurities or my feelings or my tears, whatever that is. I just feel so safe there. And so when we're emotionally intimate with each other and he shares his world and his vulnerabilities and his fears or insecurities, it just draws us closer. And to have just, you know, business talks. I mean, you guys get that, like the business side of life. It's like, it's so stimulating. It's so fun. We just keep diving deeper. And so that's the emotional, right? The emotional and intellectual intimacy. And then I said physical before I said sexual. So right now this is physical, like physically closer, the non-sexual affection, right? The hand holding, the kisses on the cheek. He'll come up to my forehead, you know, rub my shoulders or the shoulders. I'll rub his hair, you know, I'll just sit here and just play with his dreads. Like, it's just physically close, right? Physically working out together, playing basketball together, rollerblading, like with the kids. And it just, it's so good. It's such dopamine for my soul. And then, which leads towards sexual intimacy, which is beautiful. I'm feeling so connected and so vulnerable and so just 100% present with him, where it, to me, it just, it's unbelievable, right? Like after 13 years, I'm like, yeah, sign me up for E-Love, sign me up for E-Love. You know, I'm like, let me get that, you know? So it just is beautiful connection.
Our listeners are going, I know, guys, this is only available to one person. So unless you can patent that E-Love and people can do it, but 4 great steps. And I love, I'm gonna summarize one more time. You said spiritual, emotional, intellectual, physical, and then sexual. And if those four things, you are totally right. And, you know, I will make a statement here. I'll make it admit I have never been more satisfied and fulfilled in my relationship with this woman next to me. Yeah. We're coming up on 27 years than I am right now. Right. Yeah. And most people go, oh, 27 years, man. What drug? Mm. Oh, it must be getting no. It is better than it has ever been because all those other things, intimacy is incredible, but it's because it's happening in all those ways that make the sexual, the last one. It's not the most important. It's not like everything leads to that because it doesn't.
But you need it.
But it makes that the most satisfying and fulfilling. And so I'm so grateful for you guys, for you laying that out there, because it's true. And I'm testifying that it happens that way.
Yeah, it's fun. It's flirty.
It is. And you made a comment earlier, and I almost jumped ahead in our, not that we have a schedule or agenda, but one of our questions is, people often say that success in one area of life leads to success in another. And you were talking about spillover. And I have a phrase I call, I didn't coin it, but I'll say I coin it more than others. Maybe it's called spillover thinking. So I'd love to hear how the goodness of your relationship, all the things you love about what's between the two of you, how does that spill over into other areas of your life that you each witness? And maybe E, you can start off. How does the goodness of your relationship spill to other areas of your life?
I just think the love we have and the joy that we bring to each other, and the knowledge too, the way it could just spills over to just even our businesses just growing the way they're growing, from her, just knowing the ins and outs of running a business. I think, that's huge, you know, cause it's like, I don't have to go outsource and be like, ask somebody else. So I think just having a wife that runs a business and knows how to maneuver here and there, cause they helped me with my business as well. So, I think that played a huge part as well for my business to be successful to what it is now. And, you know, I mean, I can't thank her enough for putting in the work as well and helping me out doing that. So, just the love that we have and the sacrifice that we do. And she always tells me before, because I used to be a PE teacher, she used to tell me, if you want to, you know, stop being a PE teacher and going to your job full time, just let me know. She's like, because we can work it out. We can do something.
So I'll do whatever you need for you to pursue your dreams and follow that. Yeah.
But I think for me, like hearing that, I'm just like, what? It sounds like weird, but I'm like, what? You want me to do that? But then I think this year made me really realize and be like, why don't I do that and see what happens? So just her just saying that to me, like, you know, just had me right here, because it's like, I've never been with a person where it was like, go pursue your dreams. You know, they always saying it's all about me. If you pursue your dreams, cool. So I think her just saying that, you know, go get your goals and pursue your dreams. It's awesome, man. You know,
I love that you said that, because I believe in a relationship, it's really important that we know what the other's hopes and dreams are, and we allow them the opportunity to pursue those hopes and dreams. So that's good stuff.
How about you? Now, wait a minute. I heard E, is that what? E, what are the nicknames for her?
You want to tell that?
Is there a public one? I don't get any private stuff. So if you said you can't believe he doesn't call you, he doesn't, only when you're in trouble, it's Natalie, right?
Yeah, if he says Natalie. It's,
she used to have a license plate in the front of her car.
Oh, really? Oh, my gosh.
All right, I want to hear it now.
Yes.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Oh, my gosh.
So her license plate used to say Natty Boo.
Okay.
Natty Boo.
Natty Boo. Okay.
Did you ever get rid of that?
Yeah. So.
Yeah, it used to be in the front of a car, not in the back, right in the front, so everybody can see it as you drive up. And he'd be like, oh, there go Natty Boo.
I love
Hold
it.
On, didn't your email say that too?
Yeah. No, it said something else. We won't say what my old email said. Nope. But Natty Boo, he calls me, you know, Boo, sweetie, babes. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to use that. I don't feel like I have permission for Natty Boo, so I'll stick with Natalie. It still sounds a little intimate, but it was a vanity plate. So, I mean, if I'd seen it one day, I could say it and you laugh.
Yeah. I forgot all about that.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I love it.
So how about you, Natalie? How has the joy and the greatness in your relationship spilled over into other things in your life?
So first of all, I would say that it has spilled over into our children. So I have a 24-year-old daughter, and then we have an 8-year-old daughter and a 5-year-old son. And my daughter, Lacey, she has said to me before and to us, she's like, you guys are hashtag relationship goals, you know? And so I just, the love that we have, the respect that we show each other, the support that's there, I feel like it has really spilled over into our children, which is next generation, right? Like it's the legacy that we're working on leaving behind, which becomes our life goal. Our legacy becomes our life goal work, right? So I feel like it spilled over first and foremost to our kids. But honestly, in my practice, right? So I'm a licensed mental health therapist, and I do marriage intensives, and I do marriage work and individual work with clients. And I am a psycho about marriage. I love this relationship. And I tell people, I tell clients all the time, listen, you're an individual and you're an individual. You both are not, or individually are not my clients. Marriage right here, marriage is my client. And that's what I'm working for. You know, I'm working for your marriage. I'm not working one-on-one and one-on-one. Marriage is my client. And so I feel like I just want everybody to have what we have, right? In their own way, of course, like in their own personality styles, but I love it. I mean, I am so passionate about him. I mean, God saved me and gave me the best. And so I want people to have that. I want people to experience that vulnerability, that safety, that trust. And so really, I feel like it's a part of my calling, and it just overflows into my friendships, my relationships with family and friends and whomever. But I would say most importantly, in my work as a clinician, I just want people to get it, to stop being so selfish and close-minded, and to really just explore one another so that they can really find wholeness. So that's how it spilled over.
Wow. That's huge. That's awesome. Beautiful. Yeah, that is.
Both of you.
Definitely. I want to ask you, and I'm going to start with you, E, if you could go back to your unmarried self and give yourself one piece of advice, what would that be?
So I would probably tell myself to not think like a single man, like a single person, because I think when we first got married, I was still moving like a single person, not on no cheating or anything like that, but just like moving, like doing my own thing. We didn't have any kids at the time. My stepdaughter, Lacey, at the time. But I was just moving and not even letting her know what was going on. And, even money-wise, like I wouldn't even let her know what was going on with the money. I was just buying whatever and not communicating. So I would let my single self know that not to move like a single person once you get married, and know that you're in this together, like you guys are married, like you need to communicate. So I'll definitely give him the rundown. I mean, it'll be a lot more to tell him, but I definitely give him the rundown of being married and how to do it right.
Right. So come to the marriage being more open, communicating maybe a little bit stronger and better.
Oh, for sure.
And not sort of being in your own vortex is what I hear you saying. You're just living your life in your own vortex, doing your own thing.
Oh, yeah. Because at the beginning, because we were dating, we would come together, and then in the night we would leave.
Because we didn't live together before we married. We dated 3 years before we got married. And so I had my own place. He lived on his own. And so we were totally separate.
And I just got used to that. And then it was like, when we got married, it just hit me. And I was just like, oh man, we really are staying with each other together. And it's like, oh, so we don't leave?
There's no going home.
Yeah. It was like, it just hit me hard. And I definitely would tell myself, like, dude, you got to be prepared. you know, so, but yeah, but I think, but it worked, in, it worked good though. I mean, we worked through it and, I would do it over again if I had to.
Sure. I love it. How about you, Natalie?
I would tell my younger self that that the, you know, the best is yet to come, you know, just to, I feel like I settled in past relationships. I feel like I was a people pleaser and I had some codependent dynamics, in college and I stayed in a relationship for a long time in college that was unhealthy and just, I wasn't healthy with that person. That person wasn't healthy with me. And, you know, just really holding on to, hey, you know, I would tell my younger self, Natty Boo, hang on, like the best is yet to come, you know, like you are worth good things, you know, and truly, I feel like God broke the mold with E when he made him and in our marriage. And, just to, you know, literally that phrase, the best is yet to come. It's literally sitting back there. It says the best is yet to come because it is a reminder as to all the goodness that's in store and not to settle, not to waste time with those that are not worthy of my time. You know, and then to be secure in self, right? To love myself and to get to a place of being so comfortable within me that I can show that love in a healthy way, to someone that can receive it. Right. So that's what I would tell my younger self. One of the things, there's many, but that's the main one.
That's great.
Sure. Well, you guys have been so kind with your time. And before we sign off, we want to ask, where can we find you? If we want to learn more about E or Natty Boo, where do we go? How do we do that?
Good.
So, we find you?
Well, you can find me on pretty much Instagram, Facebook. You can find me at Eric Southward on Instagram. You can also find me under, do you want to plug our businesses too?
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah.
Eric Southward on Instagram and Facebook, Little Hoopsters Academy, Instagram, Facebook, Southward Elite Basketball, Instagram and Facebook as well. You can find me.
And then your website.
Well, the website is littlehoopstersacademy.com or southwardelitebasketball.com.
Great.
Right.
Good.
And then you can find me on our website. It's www.lifetransformationcounseling.com. You can also find me on Instagram, Life Transformation Counseling. Also, my personal Instagram is Natalie West Southward. However, I don't really accept people I don't know. So it would really be through Life Transformation Counseling. It's just you know, a healthy safeguard, right? Relationally. So that's where you can find me.
Terrific.
Well, thank you both so much for opening up, for your just transparency and vulnerability in sharing with us and with our listeners. There were some really great pearls to take from today. And so just thank you. Thank you. We're so grateful for your sharing with us and with our listeners.
Yeah, we appreciate all you've brought from your background, from your time together. And there will definitely be some great pearls of wisdom, as Kimberly said, that others will be able to use. And our goal is to help, you know, imperfect couples that want to level up. And by listening to this podcast and our time with you today, they will be able to do that. So thank you. We look forward to connecting with you in all those places and learning more about all the good that you guys are doing. So until next time.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Appreciate it.
That's all we've got for this episode of the Kick-Ass Couples Podcast. If you like the content of this show, you'll love Matthew's newly released book, Kick-Ass Husband, Winning at Life, Marriage, and Sex. To receive a digital mini book of quotes and images from the book, all you have to do is rate this show and leave a review in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you tune in to listen. Then email us a screenshot of your review at podcast@kickasscouplespodcast.com, and we'll get it over to you right away. Until next time, remember, happily ever after doesn't just happen. It's on purpose.